Sweet in the morning. Oh Lord, it's sweet in the morning.
And this is CPRMetro.org, Community Progressive Radio. My name is Bernard White, and the name of this program is Wake Up Call. And I'd like to welcome you to this edition of Wake Up Call.
Sweet in the morning, 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 sweet in the morning. Sweet in the morning, sweet in the morning. Oh, sweet in the morning, sweet in the morning.
Once again, this is Bernard White, and the name of the program is Wake Up Call. What I'm going to do today is to take a back seat. There's so much information, so much news that is breaking, so many ideas and issues that are out there that aren't being discussed. What I'm going to do today is to step back and let the stories tell themselves. And I hope you enjoy it. But more importantly, I hope that when it's over, that we all have learned a lot more than we did when it began. But before we begin, a little music, something from the late Terry Collier, A Trance on Sedgwick Street.
show. Everybody's running cause the sons of drums are coming, and there's trouble on the street below. A little trouble on the street below. And despair will kick your gate in, and black and white are hating while the money makers having fun. Oh Christ, your color's fading. Yeah, Buddha, where are you waiting? Turn your halos on and come. Turn your halos on. Trance on Sedgwick Street. Sweet Saint Peter, pussy willow eater, can you teach me how to pray? Up on your meter, but take the devil's time to pay. Cause it's the devil's time to play. The handsome Harry couldn't stay, so he cut out with Sister Sadie, heading back for where they've been. Well, tell me who can save the lady? Her reputation's gotten kind of shady. They say she smokes and drinks with men. Yeah. It's all right, cause I sneak a smoke myself every now and then. And whoo. What a failure, man. He's in a trance on Sedgwick Street. Now in the name of peace, are you gonna pull that bomb release? And just because they told you to. Well, fears and doubts increase. I heard your angel lost his lease, and this is our road.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm Tom Yamas in New York. We interrupt regularly scheduled programming to bring you breaking news out of Texas, where there has been a church shooting. County commissioners in the area tell ABC News that they're getting reports from the scene of 20 to 24 people dead. This happened at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs. These are images that are just coming into our newsroom right now. Sutherland Springs is about 40 miles southeast of San Antonio, a very small and rural town in Texas. At least two hospitals in the area have been told to expect several patients. Our affiliate, KSAT, reporting that the alleged shooter is dead and that the threat has been eliminated, but this is still a very active scene, as you can see. KSAT also reporting that at least six helicopters have been called in to transport victims. We do know this, that there was an 11 a.m. service scheduled for today, and before that, there was Sunday school at 9:45 a.m. We understand from eyewitnesses that the shooter came in around 11:30 a.m., right in the middle of that service, and opened fire. Senior Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas has been working this story since it first broke, and he joins us now live. Pierre.
Tom, this is a horrific situation. We have multiple sources telling us at least 20 have been killed, as many as 30 wounded. Shooter, according to our sources, is dead. Law enforcement from the federal government is descending on the scene. FBI, ATF, multiple agencies descending on the scene. No information yet on the identity of the shooter, but again, sources describing just a horrific scene. At least 20 dead, believed, and 30 wounded.
I know you've covered several of these mass shootings because so many of them have been happening over the past few years. What's a little different about this one in this case, it's that it happened in Sutherland Springs, Texas, a very small town. By some estimates, the population there under 1,000 people. We could have up to 25 people dead. And this happened in a tiny Texas church.
Yes, we have seen mass shootings in every conceivable location. This is the second church-related shooting with mass deaths in the last 3 months, I believe. Also, it's a situation where we had that horrific shooting in Charleston a few years ago. So this has been occurring with frequency. We don't know the why just yet in terms of whether this is terrorism, whether this is some sort of incident specific to that church. We just don't know those answers yet. But, Tom, we have a situation where these kind of mass shootings are happening with more and more frequency across the country.
Pierre Thomas for us. Pierre, thank you. I want to bring in our chief investigative correspondent, Brian Ross. And, Brian, we were just covering the Las Vegas mass shooting where 58 people were killed. That was about a month ago. We had the terror truck attack in New York just this past Monday, and now this.
Exactly, Tom. An ugly cycle of violence that's very hard to explain. There's still no cogent reason to understand what happened in Las Vegas. And in this case, the same questions will be asked again and again. Why? So far, no claims of responsibility from any group of any sort. And that's something the authorities will have to sort out shortly.
I do want to read on air right now a statement from Governor Greg Abbott of Texas. Our prayers are with all who were harmed by this evil act. Our thanks to law enforcement for their response. I want to bring in Brad Garrett briefly, a former FBI agent and ABC News contributor. Brad, when you see these images on the air right now, these live pictures coming into ABC News, it is a small Texas church where this man allegedly opened fire. What crosses your mind?
That it's probably somebody local that everyone in the church knows, which is helpful, obviously, from an investigative standpoint. My guess is that they know a lot about him at this particular juncture. But keep in mind, Tom, we don't know what kind of weapon, but if those numbers are accurate, you're talking automatic or semi-automatic assault rifle or a number of pistols. So the guy obviously went there well armed. To commit such a horrendous act.
Brad Garrett, our thanks to you and our team. Again, if you're just tuning in right now, we are following breaking news out of Texas where there has been a church shooting at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, just outside of San Antonio. County commissioners in the area tell ABC News that they are getting reports from the scene of 20 to 24 people dead. We also know several more have been shot. We're going to have much more details as they become available.
Good afternoon. We want to bring you up to date now on a deadly mass shooting 3 hours ago at a church in a small town in South Texas. It happened in Sutherland Springs, Texas. That's about a 45-minute drive east of San Antonio. Several law enforcement sources familiar with the investigation tell NBC News that multiple people have been killed, with children among the victims. At least 15 others were injured. The shooter was killed after a chase by police. Carrie Matula works near the church and spoke to us a short time ago.
We heard semi-automatic gunfire about right in the vicinity of this store. We're only about 50 yards away from this church. This is a very small community, so everybody was very curious as to what was going on. First responders came very quickly, like within minutes. There was fire trucks and ambulances.
Let's bring in NBC News law enforcement analyst Jim Cavanaugh, former ATF special agent who's been following all this. Jim, if it was indeed semi-automatic weapon fire that she thinks that she heard, how lethal would that be?
Well, if it's a tactical rifle, Kate, a military-style rifle, can carry all kinds of ammunition in there, 30 rounds, 60 rounds, 100 rounds, however they want to load it. And just, you know, you're trapped inside the building. The shooter unloads on you. And, of course, he made his escape to the next county north, Guadalupe County, where he was killed or killed himself or killed in a wreck. We don't know. But that's where he was apprehended. So he did the slaughter. He got in a vehicle, and he made it to the first county north of Wilson County, where the killing occurred.
And what would happen next now for investigators?
Well, big crime scene at the church, obviously. Trauma first to rescue the wounded, and a huge crime scene into the night. Search warrants at his house, trying to decipher who he is, why he did it, what's the motive. Are there any aiders and abettors, conspirators? Is there anything else, you know, afoot? That's the task right now for the commanders on the ground.
Jim Cavanaugh, thank you.
You knew that it was coming as soon as it turned out that the shooter in Sutherland Springs was a white guy. You knew where the conversation was going to go. It only took a little bit of time, and then Donald Trump brought it there. Let's watch.
I think that mental health is your problem here. This was a very, based on preliminary reports, very deranged individual. A lot of problems over a long period of time. We have a lot of mental health problems in our country, as do other countries. But this isn't a guns situation. I mean, we could go into it, but it's a little bit soon to go into it. But fortunately, somebody else had a gun that was shooting in the opposite direction. Otherwise, it would have been as bad as it was. It would have been much worse. But this is a mental health problem at the highest level. It's a very, very sad event. These are great people and a very, very sad event. But that's the way I view it.
Every single one of you could have scripted that out as soon as you saw the details about the shooting. It's not a guns thing. It's a mental health thing. It's always a mental health thing here. And you know, guns, let's just slow down a little bit. That same guy that you just saw in that video was talking about banning travel from the Middle East so fast that his advisors hadn't yet clued him into the idea that Uzbekistan isn't in the Middle East at that point. And then he wanted to shut down the entire diversity visa lottery program that night. Okay, but this is the dude who, like, let's not go crazy. I mean, this is just the worst year for mass shootings in U.S. history, but let's not go crazy.
And, you know, you can say, well, it doesn't really matter what Trump says, and certainly he says a lot of stuff where you really hope it doesn't matter. But here, because we are looking for, you know, he could make a real name for himself here in a good way. I mean, this is a guy who is just he's an abomination, right? But he could really do something. He said, yeah, we really have to examine this, and I'm going to call on congressional leadership. But he's wedded to the talking points. As John says, he knows what he has to say, and so he says it and gets into this mental health jam. And yet, the truth is, not the mental health thing wouldn't have kept this guy out of owning a gun in Texas.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. This is actually an opportunity for him. I mean, like with all of the other interests, the big financial interests and all that he's tied in with, he doesn't need the NRA. And if he were to do something, he would at least make it give me a moment of pause. Like, oh my God, this dude banned these guns again. Like, oh, that would actually be a point in his favor. Maybe he's reasonable. He could try to do that. And you might say, well, his base would abandon him. And I think that prior to Trump, that's possible. Man, they love their guns. But they now believe that this is their dear leader. If he told them that assault weapons were bad, they'd be throwing them on a pile to burn the next day.
That's exactly
right.
Use
your cult for good for once.
Yes, it's that cult of personality. And John is right. He could sell a glass of water to a drowning man, this guy, when that drowning man is one of his base, you know. And it's true. And without even having to actually craft legislation, because, of course, he's on to the next thing, next photo op. But even just some empty rhetoric from Trump that wasn't off those NRA talking points would have been welcome. And by the way, I want to clarify something. When I talk about the mental health thing in relation to the shooter in Texas, what I'm talking about is his domestic violence, his dishonorable discharge. None of that would have put him in a category of being in a mental health situation that wouldn't still have allowed him to buy a gun.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear about that. So you can get away with a lot before they can consider you mentally ill to the point that they won't allow you to buy a gun in Texas.
That's true. And look, we've been through this enough times. We know that bringing up the mental health thing is just a distraction to try to get you to not push for any actual change in the wake of a tragedy. There's no reason why we need to treat it seriously, this idea. But let's treat it seriously anyway, because we like to do that. If it is a mental health problem, in this country, and you keep saying that over and over again, then why did this happen? Bring up this graphic. Why did earlier this year Trump sign a bill revoking Obama-era gun checks for people with mental illnesses? Like, we're not even at a point where I'm trying to get you to do something about the mental illness that you think is the problem. I'm trying to get you to stop taking away the little that we've done previously. You're moving in the wrong direction, Trump, if we are to believe that you're actually being honest, which we know probably isn't the case. That rule, by the way, if you don't remember this incident, added people receiving Social Security checks for mental illnesses and people deemed unfit to handle their own financial affairs to the National Background Check database. Now, look, there's legitimate concerns over how exactly that would be used and, you know, who might fall under it. I understand that safeguards need to be in place, but that was like the one little step we took in the right direction. And he took that away. So don't give me any of that mental health problems. You're not going to go into dangerous territory there. I feel like if mental health is really the problem here, it's us. It's all of us as a country. We are fucked up in some particular way that stops us from protecting our own lives.
We've just become wedded to these ideals and so wedded that there's a whole, and it's a substantial segment of the population that is falling in line with the talking points of the NRA. Yeah. And they have bought this sort of constitutional patriotism, which has been perverted. I mean, it's sort of like the Bible, you know, where you think, well, I guess there's some good stuff in there. And the best thing about the Bible is that I can reshape it and, you know, pop out a quote to justify anything I want. And that's the same thing that's happened with the constitutional rights on guns. And so, as we sit here with these guns that were never could have been foreseen by the founding fathers, I mean, even if you accept the Constitution as a document that's not living and breathing, and of course it is a document that's living and breathing, that's why it's amended and changed and modified, you still have trouble squaring the document with what's going on now and the kinds of weapons that people are toting around.
Exactly. And again, like, I know a lot of conservatives across the country, like, people who are just, they feel like they're being fair, and they feel like, well, it's, what could it be? It's got to be the mental health. Okay, if it was mental health, if the guns are irrelevant, and it's just crazy people that would have done it anyway, then where are all of Britain's crazy people? And where are all the crazy people in Israel? And why is it that Europe is so goddamn free of crazy people? Why is it that you only seem to go crazy in America for some reason in a way that ends up with dozens of people being killed? That's weird. We should look into that at some point as a country. Isn't that bizarre that we're the only people that go crazy around the world? Maybe it's in our water. Maybe it's the stuff that's turning all the frogs gay. Maybe it also makes us go crazy. I don't know. I'll look into it.
Yeah, if you look at the formula, it's clear that the one variable in the formula is the ownership of guns. And look, you can be for the ownership of guns for a personal weapon for protection of your home or whatever, but you've got to concede that these automatic weapons or semi-automatic weapons that are then converted to effectively be automatic weapons, you've got to concede that they're not needed even to defend your home. I mean, I don't know what your home looks like, but when do you need to spray the whole place with 200 bullets? You just don't need to do it. It makes no sense. These things just don't square with the facts.
Yeah, and look, people who take home defense seriously know that you would never use something like an AR for home defense anyway, because the penetration means that it's likely to go through the walls of a house and kill either members of your family or innocent bystanders. That's why you use lower caliber weapons, things like shotguns possibly, because it's literally safer for your family in a home defense situation. Similar issues for hunting. Like, it's just BS. We all know, okay? You like them because they're cool. And I'll even grant you that. Like, I probably am more interested in guns than anyone else in this building. I think they're cool too, but I don't need to own one. And just admit it. It's because they're awesome, and understand the consequences of you feeling that they're awesome is that you think that it's okay for 30 or 40 or 50 people to routinely be gunned down because you want to be able to go, and think that that's cool. And that's fine. Maybe we're just living, you know, what a sick fucking country we live in. But here's lots of stuff is cool. I don't kill people for it. And me having access to it doesn't necessitate that other people need to die.
And the other people part of that, and this is where the shoe can pinch for everybody, it's not always the other people. Mm-hmm. You can end up, these people are at a church in Texas, probably a lot of them support gun owners' rights in that community. you can end up being a victim of it. All of us can be end up being victims of this stuff. I mean, you walk into a public, you walk into a public place now in America, and you're going, where are the exits? Just in case, you know. I know it's taken away our innocence, and as John says, it makes absolutely no sense. It is just this. Hey, man, isn't this cool? I've got a gun. That's why you see people on Facebook with guns. That's why the video of people shooting with guns. It's this aura around gun ownership. Or having a gun or using a gun. But the truth is, there is no inoculation from gun violence. You can become a victim, even as you support this constitutional right to own an AR.
Yeah, and the final point I'll make on this is something we were talking about in the wake of the New York attack, where very often we need to find out what sort of attack it was so that we know exactly what the narrative coming out of it is. And we said after New York, there's something we can do that would help with both cases. When it's, you know, a crazy gun lover who looks much more like me than he does like Osama bin Laden, or if it's somebody who is pledged to ISIS, if we invest in some sort of effort here in America to try to detect and to stop radicalization of all kinds, that will help with all sorts of attacks. And not only is Trump not doing that, something that would be so easy to do and would be greeted with applause from liberals and conservatives, but he defunded the few organizations in this country that were doing that. He took away the grants to non-governmental organizations that were trying to stop people from being radicalized. Not only are we not doing anything to protect ourselves, but we are literally disarming ourselves against some of the highest profile threats that we've seen since Trump became president.
But quickly, a note, these mass shootings that we're talking about probably have nothing to do with radicalization of any kind. These are deranged people, result of domestic dispute, angry at my girlfriend, wife, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. We still don't really know what produced the Las Vegas anger and all of that carnage. So
that's true.
These are people who weren't even radicalized. This has nothing to do with Islam or religion, at least best as we can see. I mean, the only religious part of this latest carnage is that it happened in a church. Mm-hmm. So
we'll see. We'll have to see.
I think you identify, right, it's early in the process, but I think you identify something very important, which is, honestly, it all comes back down to we're awash in these weapons, and bad shit happens.
Pooji's killing me softly, of course, yesterday, America. Had to deal. I feel so bad for that region of New York, the Tribeca area, because again, that's where the World Trade Center was, and that's, you know, they tried to blow up the World Trade Center before. It's always a scene, even before they were successful flying planes into it. That guy rented that van and tried to blow up the World Trade Center. So it's always something going on. Now we have a crazy man that just mowed down a bunch of people, killing 8 and injuring 15. And it's literally, it particularly home for me, because that's right around the corner. Right around the corner from my apartment in New York is the street I walk down when I catch the train to go to work at our station in New York. So it's very close to home, and I can't tell you how sorry I am for those people and how much I'm praying for them. But I will have to say this, that there is never an opportunity when something like that happens. When a brown person does something like that, we call it what it is immediately. And there is never an opportunity. There's some elected officials, I'll specifically call out Peter King, and who was supposedly the president of the United States of America, to try to divide us and to stoke fear. Yes, it was a horrible thing. Yes, we have to be on the lookout for people to seek to do us harm as Americans. No one can deny that. But to single them out as if I think Peter King, Representative King, said it's time to stop being so politically correct. When did you start? When did you start? Every time we have no problem with somebody, when they have brown hands responsible for something, we have no problem calling it terrorism. And it's terrible that those 8 people those 8 people were killed and 15 people were run down. It's terrible. We should do all that we can to make sure that those circumstances don't happen again. It is pretty much of an impossible task to stop people from getting into a car. I mean, because it's soft targets, it's low technology, it's a guy renting a van and getting in, but yet a lot of people, and rightfully so, are committed to making sure that we kind of mitigate those things from happening. But America has still a bigger problem, and that is white terrorists. It is. You're more likely, that man in Vegas killed more than this guy and injured more than this guy. Now, when what happened in Tribeca happened, we have to pull out all the stops and make sure it doesn't happen again. But what happened in New York, almost killing 60 people, 100, almost 100 people injured and shot, well, that's the price of freedom. There's nothing we can do about it. If you could seek to try to see who's registering vans, if you can try to stop an entire region of the world from coming in, if you'll ban immigrants, you can't try to stop what happens in terms of mass shootings in this country. One, we have a will to do, and one, we do not. One, we can demonize people, and one, we cannot. One looks different than us, and one looks just like the boy next door. But make no mistake about it. You are more danger from a person in America who can legally get a gun and is angry than you are a jihadist. You just are. But one we will do something about and one will not. I've said it before and I will say it again. Listen, that terrorist that killed those people in New York didn't even have as good a month as the white terrorist that killed people in Nevada. It just did not happen. And one we're committed to doing something about. One right away, well, he's a terrorist and we need to stop being politically correct. When that thing happened in Vegas, now is not the time to talk about this. Well, there's nothing we can do. One we're committed to doing something about and one we're not. And we never miss a chance to divide each other this way. We never miss a chance to act like it's inherently some group of people. We are the most dangerous group. Americans, by far, are the most dangerous group of people to America that ever existed. Every day, 300 Americans are shot by other Americans every year. It's 100,000 more Americans have perished at the hands of other Americans than have died in all the wars we've ever fought combined. And we have no effort to make sure we do something about that. Not one. We don't do a thing about it at all. It's supposedly the price of freedom. Yes, we should do what we can to stop people from coming to this country and causing us harm. But make no mistake, ISIS ain't got a damn thing on us.
Hey friends, good day. It's Bill Press here with the Young Turks Network, standing in front of the White House. I just left the White House briefing room, and the briefing today with Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders. This has to be one of the most earth-shaking days yet of the Trump administration. In fact, I would say it could be the beginning of the end of the Trump administration. I'm going to be joined soon by Ryan Grimm, also with the Young Turks Network, and from The Intercept, be coming along shortly. So a little background, at least to start with. You know, for the last 10 months, Donald Trump has been doing everything he can to undermine the Russian investigation. He calls it a witch hunt. He says it's fake news. He says it's all started by Democrats who can't accept the fact that Hillary Clinton lost the election. He begged James Comey to end the investigation when Comey refused. He fired James Comey, and he still said again there was nothing to it. There's just a big nothing burger. And speaking of Ryan Grimm, this morning, Robert Mueller, in effect, called Donald Trump a liar. He said, no, this is a serious investigation. There's been some serious shit going on. We're getting to the bottom of it. And he filed charges against two top Trump campaign aides, his former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, and Manafort's business partner, Rick Gates, on 12 charges of taking money, millions and millions of dollars, from a Ukrainian businessman who's very close to the Kremlin, and then lying about it and trying to launder that money and hiding it. They were charged with 12 counts, including conspiracy against the United States. And maybe more importantly, a Trump campaign aide by the name of George Papadopoulos, it was revealed today, he pled guilty to lying to the FBI about all the efforts he was making in the Trump campaign to set up meetings with Russian operatives who allegedly had dirt on Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
So that's the bombshell news that broke this morning. We go to the briefing room this afternoon, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders says, this has nothing to do with us, nothing to do with Donald Trump, nothing to do with the campaign, which, I'm sorry, Ryan, is pure unadulterated horseshit. They worked, all three of them worked for the campaign. Manafort was the campaign manager, and then he left. Gates stuck around. Papadopoulos was with the campaign, was talking to this guy, Sam Clovis. We saw him on television all the time, about setting up meetings. He was in touch with a professor who said, let's set up some meetings. He even talked about setting up a meeting with Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin because he said they could bring dirt on Hillary, including copies of her emails, which means they already knew they were hacking into the Clinton campaign.
Yeah.
And Huckabee Sanders had the audacity today. Of course, she was ordered to do it by Trump, but she agreed to do it. Took him out and said, it has nothing to do with us. Oh, yes, it does. This is a big deal, as Joe Biden would say, a BFD. I'll be careful about using that word. What do you think?
Yeah, she said he's just a campaign volunteer. Right. You know, he's just some guy whose ideas were rebuffed and ignored earlier. I think it was Sean Spicer who was saying, well, Paul Manafort, the guy barely did anything on the campaign.
Right.
Other than be campaign manager, like beyond that. And then what I was saying about Rick Gates. So he's kind of like Manafort's man wherever he goes. And Rick Gates stayed at the campaign. There was this report that came out that said Manafort had gotten $12 million off the books from these Ukrainian oligarchs. And as a result, he kind of was pushed out because, you know, and he was losing an internal struggle and it's not as if, oh, my goodness, Paul Manafort engaged in outrageous behavior overseas. It was more like, OK, we can use this report to push him out. So they push him out. But Rick Gates stayed in, and Rick Gates is the conduit for everything that Manafort was trying to accomplish. And so then you have that June 9th. You know, much discussed meeting between Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, Jared Kushner, and the Russian lawyer, who we've now learned had talking points from the Russian government and had extensive contacts with the Russian government before she came to this meeting and talked about and offered things, emails and other dirt. And Donald Trump said, great, love it, absolutely love it. And then we have maybe a parallel thing here going on with Papadopoulos that we're now finding out. This guy has rolled, and his lawyer said in a statement that looked like it was written by Mueller, we can't wait for George to have the opportunity when called on by the court to reveal all the details of his story. Right. Like, ooh, okay, well. Yeah.
And meanwhile, the Trump White House, with the full cooperation of the disgraced Congressman Devin Nunes, who had to retire or step aside as head of the House Investigative Intelligence Committee, the Intelligence Committee, because he was such a puppet of Donald Trump. Nunes now has launched two investigations trying to change the subject and to get people to focus on Hillary instead of Donald Trump, talking about this old uranium deal, which has been totally discredited, and also talking about the fact that during the general election campaign, Democrats paid for opposition research against Donald Trump. Shocking. They continued the same firm that had been hired by right-wing anti-Trump Republicans during the primary to find out dirt. So they're trying to pursue that. And again, the White House saying today, we should be talking about Hillary, not about Donald Trump. No. Donald Trump is the president. Paul Manafort worked for Donald Trump. Rick Gates worked for Donald Trump. George Papadopoulos worked for Donald Trump. And I guess one final thing I would say about this, Ryan, is, again, what Mueller did today proves that this is a serious investigation into serious charges by a serious special prosecutor, Robert Mueller. And Donald Trump has to know this is not the end of the road. This is the first in what I think is going to be a wave of a continuing investigation, and there will be more indictments. And I think the more indictments are going to get from the campaign into the White House and maybe all the way to the Oval Office.
Right, and I think you do Manafort first because, well, A, apparently there were some statute of limitations issues coming up with some of the laundering that was going on, so you had to move on Manafort quickly. But if you're going to charge people for things like a FARA violation, which is not registering to lobby for a foreign principal, or money laundering, Jared Kushner all of a sudden has much more expensive legal bills. This is a guy who did not disclose on a lot of his on his forms to get a security clearance, a lot of different meetings that he had with Russian agents. Well, we know.
I think three times he failed to report these meetings with foreign officials.
Right, and so if you're willing to hit this kid Papadopoulos for lying, and you're going to hit Manafort for his foreign lobbying paperwork, and it looks like you're going to hit Tony Podesta. So Tony Podesta this morning, he's John Podesta's brother, coincidentally, but they're kind of like mirror images of each other, and it's like Shakespearean that they're both caught up in this. Tony Podesta this morning told his staff at the Podesta Group that he's resigning. He's going to step aside, and he said, I'm going to fight this fight individually, and I don't want it to drag down all of the rest of you. So what fight is he fighting? Clearly, that he's confirming there that the feds are coming after him, because he's named as either lobbying shop A or B in the Paul Manafort indictment. Manafort was using the Podesta Group to lobby on behalf. So you've got that's another person that's powerful and is caught up in this. So Kushner, just for those violations alone, if Mueller wants to, and it looks like Mueller does want to, has leverage on Kushner as well.
Right. No, I think the people that have to be nervous today are Jared Kushner, Donald Trump Jr., and Michael Flynn, by the way. Let's not forget him. Manafort's clients in the Ukraine were pro-Russian political parties and business leaders who had many, many contacts in the Kremlin. So there still is a question about, and by the way, this was between 2009 and 2016.
Right.
So in 2016, Manafort is already, a part of that year at least, working for Donald Trump. Did he use his contacts from the Ukraine to try to reach out to the Russians to get some help for Donald Trump, or to help them hack? That's still an open question. Donald Trump has tweeted again this morning, no collusion. That's not what we learned this morning. We learned that George Papadopoulos, campaign aide, foreign policy advisor to Donald Trump, was using his connections to try to line up meetings, maybe even a meeting with Trump and Putin, but meetings between Kremlin operatives who had dirt on Hillary Clinton to meet with the Trump campaign officials, including emails. That is collusion. So whether it happened or not, he was attempting to collude.
Right, yeah. And Sarah Sanders' best defense is, we ignored his suggestions and he's a nobody. That means there's one reason she would say that's the best you can do.
Let's go back to just what it says in the indictment for a second.
Which one?
Well, against Manafort and Gates. So it's, as Trump points out in his tweeting, that these are events that took place before Manafort and Gates went to work for Trump. And it has to do with money laundering. Now, is he trying to launder money because it's illegal money that he shouldn't have earned and get in trouble, or is it because he just didn't want to pay taxes on it?
Well, I'd say there's two answers to that. One, some of it is illegal in the sense that it was money that we've now discerned is illegal because it was money from Ukraine to Manafort and Gates for lobbying, and he didn't want it
not reported.
And he didn't report the lobbying. So that the not reporting the lobbying would be illegal. Otherwise, we're talking about just a basic tax violation. And the way that the money laundering scheme works. And Dave Dayan for The Intercept actually kind of broke this in February by just noticing a bunch of real estate transactions that only make sense through the lens of money laundering. And the basic scheme, which the Treasury Department, recently said that 30% of high-priced properties in Manhattan were the result of suspicious activity. 30%. And so here's the suspicious activity that unfolds. You set up a little company offshore, let's say somewhere in the Bahamas or Seychelles or elsewhere. You call it Manafort's Money LLC. Money that comes from Ukraine, you stick into this company in the Bahamas. The company in the Bahamas then buys a $3 million condo in the Trump Tower. So it's the owner, and this happened. So it's the owner then, free and clear of this property. You then take that property to a normal bank, or actually some shady banks as well, but preferably you take it to like a Citibank, and you say, hey, look, I've got this $3 million property. I have no debt on it. I want to refinance it. Give me a $3 million loan. Bank says, of course, the collateral is the property. Here's your $3 million loan. Boom. You now have $3 million cash that you can spend. And you paid no taxes on it.
Yeah. And just a postscript on that. I don't buy the line that this was all over and done with before Paul Manafort went to work for Donald Trump. He almost literally walks out of the Ukraine deal, for which he made tens of millions of dollars, and walks into Donald Trump's office. You cannot tell me that he didn't continue to keep in touch with his Ukrainian-Russian clients for help in that campaign.
Right.
And that hasn't been, well, We don't know whether Mueller has explored that yet, but this is not part of this indictment. There could be more.
Right. And I would say, if there was sort of the last thing that ever came up and we never had the Papadopoulos thing this morning, and you know, if Mueller did a year's worth of investigation and he nailed Paul Manafort and Rick Gates on money laundering and not registering as foreign lobbyists, bogus, nothing burger. Like, I mean, sure, put them away if they committed crimes, but they didn't tilt the election. You know, we're like, this isn't like a world historic geopolitical event. What this is Mueller attempting to get leverage on somebody who will then talk so that they don't die old men in prison.
That's the way all of these investigations work. And I said this earlier. Maybe you weren't here yet. This is not the end of the road. Sarah Huckabee Sanders today said they have indications that Mueller is nearing the end of his investigation. You know what? They're living on Jupiter. I mean, that's total baloney. There's no indication of that. In fact, every indication of just the opposite. Mueller has hired a Cracker Jack staff, and they're in for the long haul.
Yeah, he's working fast.
And they usually start with a few fish. Manafort's a big fish, not necessarily a little fish, and they keep working up the chain.
The point I'd love to make is on Jeff Sessions.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, boy, Jeff Sessions. He may wind up regretting this draconian mandatory minimum policy that he reinstituted. This is a guy who multiple times denied ever having any contacts with any Russians, then had to amend that, made under oath, because he actually met with Sergei Kislyak a couple times. But he said, we only talked about Ukraine and other foreign policy issues. Now it has emerged that, in fact, Kislyak told his superiors back in Moscow that they talked about the 2016 campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it has emerged that Papadopoulos, who was a foreign policy advisor, which is basically working under Sessions in the Trump campaign, is ready to sing. What did George tell Jeff about what he knew?
Because Jeff was head of this committee that Papadopoulos was a member of.
If George was furiously telling everybody in the senior ranks of the campaign that the Russians had this dirt and we ought to make these meetings, what are the chances that he did not tell Sessions?
By the way, in terms of regretting things, I'll just
we're going to make
final
Bill
point.
Pretty late.
I know, I'm going to be really late. But the person who really should be regretting something today is Donald Trump. Remember, the only reason we have Robert Mueller and the special investigation is because Donald Trump made the unbelievably stupid mistake of firing James Comey.
Yeah, and listening to Jared Kushner.
And listening to Jared Kushner. And so there you are, man. Yeah. It's a self-inflicted wound, a big time.
Yep, see you, man. I see it.
Newly discovered financial documents have revealed that the Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross, apparently hid business ties to members of Russian President Vladimir Putin's inner circle during his Senate confirmation process. Now, this sort of failure to disclose information was very common for a number of people during that process. There's something about going before the Senate that just flusters you and you forget about these businesses you own and meetings you had with ambassadors. Weird how that works out. But let's talk about these documents. The details of Ross's financial holdings were revealed in a trove of more than 7 million internal documents of Appleby, a Bermuda-based law firm that was leaked to a German newspaper that I am not going to attempt to pronounce. Some of those documents were then provided to NBC News by ICIJ, an organization that calls them the Paradise Papers, obviously a reference to the Panama Papers. Those were then analyzed and these connections were found. Well, let's break down what those are. Ross's investment firm has a 31.5% stake in Navigator, a British company that charters ships to help energy companies move their materials around the world. One of Navigator's top clients is the Russian energy giant Cyber, whose owners include Gennady Timchenko, Putin's friend and judo partner, who is sanctioned by the United States, and Putin's son-in-law as well. Okay, so he has an investment firm. It has a 31% stake in this company, and they do dealings with the sons and martial arts partners of Vladimir Putin. Okay, so that's the connection, I guess. Well, let's talk a little bit more about this. According to Navigator's SEC filings from this year, Cyber wasn't just a client of them. It was one of their top five clients. Back in 2016, that company alone brought them $23.2 million and $28.7 million thus far this year. Now, he has responded to these allegations saying that claims that he didn't properly disclose the ties were, quote, totally incorrect, and called the media's reporting of it, quote, just an example of the press trying to find anything they can, however remote or silly, to attack the president and somehow link him to Russia. He went on to say that it was disclosed on the form 278, which is the financial disclosure form, in my case, three times, which, if it was true, would be strong evidence in support of what he said. However, he did not disclose those things on the document. He is simply lying to you.
Yeah, you know, this is extraordinary because here's a guy who's in charge of implementing the Russian sanctions, for example, right? And he has this strong relationship that he, financial relationship that he continues to maintain, despite the fact that he knows he's going to have to be dealing with Russia in no small capacity in relation to these sanctions. This is just, if it were just the only thing going on in this administration, it would be extraordinary. But it's unethical. I don't know that it's illegal yet. I guess that's going to be explored. But the lack of ethics in this administration.
Lubenthal wants to look into it, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, across the board, there just seem to be no ethical underpinnings. This is extraordinary. I mean, absolutely extraordinary. You know, if you were a reporter on CNBC or something, you know, one of the new, financial news network, you have to divest yourself of all stocks and equities. And I think maybe they make you put them in a blind
really?
Trust, but yeah, because you're reporting on stuff that will affect the markets,
yeah.
Right? So we demand more of journalists who are reporting on business than we do of our
That's
leaders in Capitol Hill. I mean, it's insanity.
That's a great point. We demand more of those people, most of whom are just fake news, but we still expect them to live up to a higher standard.
We've talked about the conflicts of interest that run ripe over this administration.
Yeah.
From the president, Donald Trump, all the way down through his cabinet, et cetera, and through Jared and through Ivanka and all the rest. So,
yeah.
This is just one more plank in this ridiculous boardwalk of trouble that they, at least ethically, that they've laid out.
Yeah. No, exactly. And, you know, forget Russia. Forget like that this might have any connection to the campaign. Forget all of that. It's a financial conflict of interest that he decided the Senate didn't need to know about. And I remember back when we were covering all of these Senate confirmation hearings, and we covered them super in depth, so much so that lots of people got bored, and I understand why. But the reason we were doing it is because we knew that there was going to be so much shady, corrupt shit that they were going to try to make as much money for themselves, that Trump was going to install people that would allow him to loot the US Treasury. And it keeps coming up that people forgot all sorts of stuff. I mean, he forgets this connection that might have made him millions of dollars. Jared forgets multiple companies he owns when he's talking to these groups. It's amazing how their minds just, they just shut up. They just blank out for just a second. So even if you don't care about the Russia stuff, I mean, this is the Commerce Secretary, a man who has direct ability to shape policy and implementation of policy in a way that both benefits him and potentially benefits or hurts U.S. corporations and individuals. I mean, this is the sort of corruption that we knew would come with Trump, but they're so brazen with it, and we need to do something. We need to take this guy out, just like happened to Price.
Yeah, that's the thing. This, all the corruption in Washington usually is in the back door. This is right in the front door. And the fact that he would accept this one thing, like that he would leave out this one thing, I think speaks volumes. By the way,
sorry, I'm a child.
The amount of, what's that? What?
Never mind. That is a very good point. That they're just incompetent. Like they're getting bad at being corrupt. And Trump's been doing it for decades, and he still sucks at it.
Well, here's the reason, I think, or one reason. I'd love to hear what other people have to say. But the fact is, these are super rich guys. I mean, Wilbur is.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these are
a billionaire,
and billionaires are used to doing what they want.
Yeah.
And so I think these guys are not used to having to sort of play between the lines. They've never had to play between the lines before.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I feel like I know that the Senate is going to want to look into this. They want to talk to Sessions some more and all of that. But I mean, I feel like with enough examples like this, it's time to institute a Senate. We need like extreme vetting for all of the people that made it through the Senate already. Let's go back through, make sure that everything's been mentioned. Oh, here's, you know, a $500 million loan I forgot about initially. You know, just let's get it all out in the open.
That is gravely critical, because the rule of law is rarely fundamental. Moral values and rights. hate and spite, because that is wrong and in no way could be right. But evildoers will do you wrong, be it in societal tension. When they don't do that, they hug up and they laugh, conspiring from the exalted tower. The one desire is power, with the intention to split this nation in half. We got to have principles of fairness, establish a code of ethics, with decency for not one or two, but all. So then, before you get the evidence, don't take away a man's innocence. Standardize and over-standardize your call. The time has come to walk hand in hand, inspire the next generation, to be proud and to build upon our legacy. Take all in consideration, aggrandize our blessed nation, with alacrity to gain more prosperity. Nobody taking responsibility, but the resources really have to offer. Nobody here should have to suffer. They think money's for them alone, for heaven's sake, so they run in tongue like a private estate. Why are you in corruption? It's such a rampant thing. Too much of people are revealing. It aggravates me and makes me feel so sad. People we depend most upon, double dealing from the still dawn of scrupulousness could drive the people mad. You got to stand for societal justice, stand against vindictiveness, move as one for in unity their strength. Liberal or if conservative, balance your initiative. For the good of all, we should go to any length, because culturally and materially we are very, very strong. Religious freedom we have till kingdom come, but absolute power can work yet. You have to make up your mind to share the blessings we have to all and not just some. Cross of trouble of all sort, Messiah than the Piaco Airport. And then is the Tobago Hospital, funding for that is Big Bacchanal. Animosity has come between friend and friend, agreements made now no one can comprehend. Murder, rape and kidnapping for that some. The DP and Chief Justice can't get along. This city burn. Money is the root of all evil. No one should dance with the devil. But be like so much bubble, will we ever learn? Let not assassinating character pattern our behavior, even though we know we are not angels and saints. Malintent and insincerity can be seen though you say you're sorry. Reputation is not a thing to soil or taint. Self-respect is a matter of fact. Nobody could exist without that, and it should be treated as a God-given right. Self-discipline makes you stronger still. It even gives you an iron will. You see your way even through the darkest night. Why so much discrimination, inequity and favoritism? Equality is our only rectitude. Disagreement should make me vulgar, crude and rude. Public healthcare and security, like higher learning, was virtually free. Well, this utopian paradise was a fact. Shangri-La died, yes, we could bring it back. Indeed, problems have risen through the years, the political and social affairs. The media could change us from what we've become. Politicians should act responsibly and define racial consistency that will improve our constitutional freedom. Shout it out from the highest steeple. We are no one united people. Peace, love and happiness we will endure. Stand together for the country's sake. Faith in the Lord cannot shake. Whether we are rich or destitute and poor, we know that some of us just might stray because some people so always. But it's the rock of ages that's leading us today. Our leaders must take a stronger stance with assurance and not ambivalence. Independence would have much more significance.
Welcome to On Contact. Today we discuss the silencing of the left with Truthdig editor-in-chief Bob Scheer.
They have created an atmosphere of hysteria that if anyone questions military spending, aggressiveness, anything else, they're going to be thought to be agents of a foreign power. Come on.
On Contact with Chris Hedges. There is strong evidence that Google is suppressing public access to socialist and left-wing websites by using algorithms that divert users away from these sites when they type in certain keywords, such as U.S. military, inequality, socialism, and even figures such as Julian Assange. This censorship is being carried out as part of what Google, along with Facebook, Twitter, The New York Times, Washington Post, BuzzFeed News, Agence France-Presse, and CNN, say is a campaign to marginalize fake news. Most of these organizations have strong links to the Democratic Party. RT correspondent Anya Parampel looks at the new McCarthyism that is underway to silence the left-wing press.
Alternative media is under attack like never before, particularly left-wing and anti-war outlets. Since the election of Trump, the establishment has been falling all over itself to stop the spread of what it calls fake news. There's just one problem. While the concept isn't really anything new, remember Saddam's weapons of mass destruction? Some forces have emerged to declare themselves the arbiters of fake news. Specifically, an organization calling itself Prop or Propaganda or Not came forward with a list of Russian influence operations it considers to be fake news. And while it did list RT and Sputnik, organizations which don't hide their connection with the Russian government and operate like any other state media, it also included sites like antiwar.com, Alternet, the Ron Paul Institute, Truthout, and Truthdig, all with zero evidence of the site's relationship with Russia or an influencing operation. They even included Press TV, Iran's state media channel. But this wasn't just a harmless list. Months later, Google announced it was changing its algorithm to filter out fake news. And many sites similar to the ones on that list or on that list have experienced a decline in traffic. Since Google has announced the changes, Alternet says it's experienced a 40% decline in traffic. In September, the World Socialist website reported a 75% drop in traffic since the changes took place. The attack on alternative sites led Julianne Tvetin, a reporter for In These Times, to coin the term the Russia fear-mongering industrial complex, saying the campaign is successfully marginalizing the left. RT reached out to Google and asked who exactly they consulted when designing their new algorithm and why left-wing and anti-war sites are being disproportionately affected. And they told us, quote, "Providing users with authoritative and useful information for their search query is our top priority. Because of this, we are constantly improving our algorithms to provide this type of content at scale across the wide range of topics people search for on Google. When we change our algorithms, it does mean some sites may lose visibility. Most importantly, we have never re-ranked search results to manipulate political sentiment."
Thank you, Anya. My guest today is Bob Scheer. He is the editor-in-chief of Truthdig, which has seen its traffic plunge by nearly 20% since the Google algorithms were put in place. I publish a column every Monday on the site. Scheer was formerly a reporter and columnist for the Los Angeles Times and the editor of Ramparts magazine. He is a professor at the Annenberg School for Communications and Journalism, at the University of Southern California and the author of 13 books, including his latest, They Know Everything About You, How Data-Collecting Corporations and Snooping Government Agencies Are Destroying Democracy. So, Bob, let's talk about what we're seeing, what you have called repeatedly the new McCarthyism, only this time it's not coming from the rabid right wing, the Joe McCarthys and of the Republican Party, but from the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I consider this one of the most frightening moments. And I've been around a long time, by the way. I spent 29 years at the Los Angeles Times, legacy media, as a reporter and columnist and so forth. And I want to make one thing clear. Fake news has always been a problem. Okay, fake news comes from governments all over the world, particularly when it deals with national security. I was sitting there at
the CIA has made.
Yeah, I was sitting. Was sitting there at the Los Angeles Times 20 years after the Gulf had sunk in, which was the supposed attack, the second one on by North Vietnamese PT boats on a destroyer and aircraft carrier of the U.S., you know, these huge ships, and it never happened.
Well, just like the attack on the Maine in the harbor of Havana, right. Never happened.
Okay,
right.
But a lot of people knew it, including the president and Secretary of Defense, Lyndon Johnson, Ron Mayer, and what came out 20 years after the fact when the key documents were finally declassified, and I wrote about it for the Los Angeles. They knew before they talked to the nation, the president and secretary of defense, that there was no evidence of an attack. They were warned by Captain Herrick. I interviewed him. The guy was on the destroyer saying, we recommend holding off. There is no evidence, you know. Admiral Stockdale, who was the longest held prisoner of war, was up there in a plane. He couldn't talk about it because he was then captured and being one of the pilots sent over. And he ended up writing a book. He said, I was awakened, go bomb North Vietnam. I said, what for? They said, because we were attacked. He said, there was no attack. I was flying above. So that's like the invasion of Iraq. We're talking really
right.
Major fake news. This is not some yo-yos, you know, somewhere in Russia or Ukraine or somebody, you know, doing stuff. And by the way, that kind of stuff is done by every government now in the world. That's what my book was about. As Eric Schultz pointed out, you can take third-rate stuff off the shelf and be a two-bit dictator somewhere, and you can get massive amounts of information, disrupt communication. This is what happened.
But the fact is that the charges that fake news somehow elected Trump, I mean, this is... it is true that every government does it, but they've not offered any evidence.
Okay, let me address this. This is the most shameful moment for the Democratic Party establishment in, I think, maybe in my lifetime. Because at least in the old McCarthy, this is the new McCarthy period, and the old McCarthy period, okay, it was coming from the right, and the warmongers,
right.
You know, and they were attacking Democrats in the State Department, you know, for selling out or being subversive. Also, that red baiting campaign was based on reds. There were red revolutionaries,
right.
And they did have a program of, you know, revolution and so forth. The red baiting now is not directed at the last significant communist party. You know, I wouldn't mention North Korea. I don't think was ever really a communist party, but China.
Yeah.
Okay, and they've turned out to be the most splendid capitalists in the world. Splendid, at least, in being able to make a lot of money and make products that people want. And Russia is run by people who I consider to be quite conservative. You know, I wrote the introductory preface to Oliver Stone, the transcript of Oliver Stone's interview with Putin, and Putin is very clear that he thinks communism is a failed ideology. It was always a pipe dream. He thinks Gorbachev was naive to think he could save it. And he believes in this kind of variation of crony capitalism. He's unabashed in his support of what I, as a progressive, don't like. I, I still have an idea we can have some social democratic society that is fair and just. So the irony in this red baiting is that it's fundamentally illogical. You know, Putin's Russia does not have a grand design to spread an ideology around the world. What it is this old-fashioned nationalism. You could trace it back to the czars, if you like. You know, they were abused. I was in Russia covering it for the Los Angeles Times when Gorbachev was doing perestroika and glasnost and so forth. It was a feeding frenzy for American experts, NGOs, agents, blah, 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 all over the place. Yeltsin was their guy.
Well, the CIA put millions.
Yeah, Yeltsin was their guy against Gorbachev, really. And Putin came out of the St. Petersburg crowd, the subject and so forth. He was brought into the Yeltsin government, and then Yeltsin, in desperation, turned to Putin because he was the only guy that wasn't a drunk and out for himself and was competent. And he said, look, I got to resign, but you got to take over. And then Yeltsin wins the election the next year against the Communist Party candidate. So the red baiting is against a guy who was an anti-communist. And they bring up, oh, you know, it's KGB. Well, how many CIA people, you know, have we had in government? You know, what
well,
does
we
that
had
mean?
One as President Bush.
Yeah,
I mean.
Yeah, you know, yeah, the first President Bush.
But let's talk about what is it that the Democratic Party, first of all, let's talk about what they're doing in terms of the red baiting, and then tell me why
okay,
they're doing it.
There are two forces operating here, and it's so disreputable because it's basically at the heart of it petty, yet its destructiveness is enormous. One is you have legend media, as it's called, the New York Times, Washington Post, particularly the Washington Post, you know, and others, whose business model is destroyed. So the Washington Post gets saved by Jeff Bezos, who buys it as his personal property. Meanwhile, his company, Amazon, is building the cloud for the intelligence agency, CIA. So you have the old military-industrial complex. And the Washington Post has been leading this attack, and the Russians are everywhere. Meanwhile, they're building the cloud for the CIA and the NSA and everything. And their guy, Bezos, owns the Washington Post. He's the publisher. So much for independent legend newspaper. But also the New York Times have been just beating the drum on this, you know, with no evidence that they've been able to come up
well,
with.
Well, so is CNN. So
yeah.
is MSNBC.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the publications that I really respect or have respected through my life. I mean, I like Dean Baquet, who's the editor of the New York Times. I think he's a solid fellow. I like Marty Baron, who's the editor. I mean, I've worked with these people. They were both
right.
at the LA Times
right.
When I was there. And I think it's really an embarrassment. I say shame.
So what's their goal? What are they doing?
They're doing it because their business model is broken and this internet, this crazy wild world. Yes. And the internet is the best and the worst of everything. That's what I find it exciting. I edit Truth Dig, and we can, yes, we do good reporting. By the way, with traditional journalists, you know, Bill Boyarsky, who was at the city editor of the Los Angeles Times, is sort of our main political writer. You were at the New York Times. You're our leading columnist. And our copy editor is somebody who was at the LA Times, who can pull any story. So we actually are basically a publication done by people who left the LA Times, who the New York Times or other places, as are many internet publications, whether they're for profit or nonprofit. But they're basically, it's convenient to the establishment papers that are in trouble economically to badmouth internet operations, okay, and say, oh, this is now the center of fake news. The fact is, fake news is exposed very quickly on the internet. That's one of the great things about it. You can say, wait a minute, I looked for the original document. I checked the history, you know, and people can find it really with dispatch.
We'll come back to that after the break. When we return, we'll hear more from Bob Scheer. On Contact with Chris Hedges. Welcome back to On Contact. Let's return to our conversation with Bob Scheer, editor-in-chief of Truth Dig. So this red baiting, why is it dangerous? What is it, you know, what are potentially its effects?
Because it's disconnected with the world reality. Communism is not the menace in the world, okay? And Putin does not represent communism. He's an anti-communist. So it's an idiotic way of looking at things. As far as specific charge of who's threatening democracy, my own view is we're primarily threatened by our own intelligence apparatus that is setting a model for the world. If they can tap Angela Merkel's phone, if they can go into Russia and do that, if they can bring missiles up to the border of Russia, if they can, I mean, it's very aggressive stuff that's been going on as part of an idea that we're an imperial power. We cloak it with peace seeking. And the lesson of our founders, it was George Washington who warned us about the impostures of pretended patriotism. If there's one truly, I mean, there's a lot of wisdom in the founders, but the most important, don't become an empire. If you become an empire, you're going to collapse like Rome and Spain and England and blah, blah, blah. And you, to have a democracy, you have to have more limited sense of your relevance to the world in terms of military and so forth. What we have is a full-blown imperial outreach, you know, and it's dangerous. And the Democrats have actually more of a war party now than the Republicans. I mean, they were under Johnson, they were even under Kennedy. They're very aggressive, and it becomes like a way of unifying the nation. They claim they're doing it for a larger good, human rights or something, but it turns out not to be the case. If you read Hillary Clinton's book about her time as Secretary of State, she brags about being far more aggressive than Barack Obama, pushing into Syria. And we know what disaster is. We know she voted for the Iraq War. We know that is about what she did in Libya. Is, you know, atrocious behavior. You got a defanged dictator and you sodomize him and you say, well, we came, we saw, and we conquered. I mean, this is brutality visible to the world. And the red baiting is an absurd, because there aren't reds, justification.
Okay,
what are the costs? And I'll tell you the costs. Russia still has half the nuclear weapons in the world, okay? And there is Russian nationalism. You poke your stick in their eye, and any nation, they're going to respond in ways that are not totally constructive, okay? You need Russia and China and Pakistan and India as allies, and Japan clearly, and South Korea, if you want to deal with the North Korean problem, which is real, okay? If you want to have peace in Syria, you certainly need Russia to cooperate. So we've got this crazy situation now, and same with Iraq, same with Iran, and so forth. So we have this crazy situation where hopefully Trump could have parleyed somehow personal chemistry or something with some of these Ruskies into a better peace initiative. He now has to prove he's more belligerent than anyone. Right. Otherwise, his objectivity will be challenged. So, you know, to my mind, the demonization of any of these other countries, and by the way, even North Korea, you know, a country that was leveled, nobody even seems to know that.
Yeah, I know. We even bombed their dams.
Yeah,
there was nothing left.
How did these North Koreans get to be so crazy?
Right.
I happened to go to North Korea once, you know, as a journalist. And I tell you, they take you to one museum after another. This is what the Chinese did to us. This is what the Japanese did to us. This is what the Americans did to us. You know, so nationalism, same with Russia. My mother, by the way, left Russia after the revolution. She was in a group called the Jewish Socialist Bund. Two of her sisters had been killed, you know, by the Cossacks, and then they ran afoul of the Bolsheviks. So, I was raised with that idea that the Russians don't always make right choices. But the fact of the matter is, you know, they have history. They have nationalism. They lost 50 million in the war, you know, in World War II, when we were very late to enter. So you keep challenging the right of anyone else in the world to have a nationalism that has any validity. Well, as you know, because you've been a foreign correspondent most of your life, I certainly know from my more limited contact with the rest of the world, everyone has got a story out there of abuse and what was done to them. And if you just act as if that none of that matters, and only American nationalism, we're the only ones that were ever attacked. We're the only ones that were ever vulnerable. We always do the right thing. If you operate on that basis, now, yes, Trump is a bizarre manifestation of that with the Make America Great. But it was Hillary Clinton who said, oh, America is great. And has
always been great.
Always been great. Oh, yeah? When we committed genocide in California and wiped out Native Americans, had people throw babies in the fire, was that an America that was great, you know, and those people, you know, basically escape punishment. You can go through the history. Was slavery great? You know, so this whole thing that's been ushered in by the Democrats is, to my mind, really more ominous than what Trump is doing, because Trump is a buffoon. Trump will blow, unless Trump becomes more successful in being reasonable, and he's doing some things like cooperating with the Democrats on the budget limit, and maybe he'll do something with DACA, you know, and maybe he'll do some reasonable things and salvage his reputation. But the fact is, the cynicism of the Democrats is on full display. Play any trick. You know, oh, Russia took over our land. No, Russia didn't question the
election. But why is it dangerous? What is the blow? What do you fear in terms of a blowback?
Because they are stoking the irrational xenophobia of America, of foreign enemies, that we have to get them. And now they have very few choices. I mean, they don't want to go after Saudi Arabia, which did, you know, paid for al-Qaeda. But they don't blame themselves for having created a situation in Afghanistan of great instability, because remember, Zbigniew Brzezinski and Carter said, we're going to give them their own Vietnam. They don't blame themselves for being indifferent or not doing enough to solve real problems. Immigration. I was on that border when Jimmy Carter was president and Leonardo Castillo was his head of immigration, and you had all the problems you have now. You know, you didn't solve them. You've had all of these years to have a humane policy on the border. The biggest problem, by the way, is not building a wall or not building a wall. Because, you know, what is humane about letting people across a desert not have water? I was on those patrols and everything. It's pathetic. What you needed is a reasonable quota, recognize the connection between Mexico and the United States, have a quota at least four times greater than what you have for Sweden or you know, a country like that.
But Bob, what are the consequences? How could this play out?
The consequence right now is that the Democratic leadership has destroyed or subverted a progressive alternative in America. They have created an atmosphere of hysteria that if anyone questions military spending, aggressiveness, anything else, they're going to be thought to be agents of a foreign power.
Which they've tried to target.
Doing this interview, let's cut to the chase. Just my being here doing this interview, and I've been on RT other times and so forth, you know, do I have to worry about, you know, people going to say, you know, I say, screw you, you know, I'm not going to fall for that, but other people will. People get intimidated. They'll have to prove how independent they are. They say, yeah, look, let's blow up a city in Russia or something. Yeah, you know, we'll be tough, you know, instead of examining how did the Ukraine part solve, you know.
Well, you made a point before we went on the air that in the 1950s, it was a few good people within the Democratic Party who were standing up to McCarthyism. Now, today, we have essentially those people fueling.
You had a few good people in both the Republican and the Democratic Party who stood up. Eisenhower was a person who stood up at a critical point. We don't have moderates on the Republican Party. The ones who claim to be moderate, like Rubio and so forth, are actually more irrational on foreign. They want to go to war with Cuba or something. So, and the Democrats, one would have thought, would be a place where people who supported diplomacy and complex analysis and so forth would be comfortable, except now they have embraced a totally irrational, simplistic and extreme conception of what's going on in the world. It's nutso. I mean, to be talking about the Reds, I mean, to be talking about Russia as a revolutionary country when Russia is a deeply conservative country now. And I say that not with approval. I mean, but conservative in every respect, embracing the Russian Orthodox Church. You know, I mean, they are not, and they never really were. There was always a nationalist movement, even going back to Stalin. But now it's deliberately, you know, a nationalist psychology. Why? Because they've been battered. They've been battered, and, you know, and they will presumably move closer to the Chinese model, embrace a more vigorous capitalism and so forth. But the idea that somehow Russia is this big menace is a fraud. They know it's a fraud.
We're going to have to stop there. Thanks. Thank you for joining us. That was Bob Scheer, editor-in-chief of Truthdig. As long as most citizens believe in the ideas and ideologies that justify global capitalism, the power elites will remain unassailable. When these ideas lose their credibility, as they have, the institutions that buttress the ruling class deflate and veer towards collapse. An increasing number of Americans know that we have been stripped of political power. They recognize that we have been shorn of our most basic and cherished civil liberties, and they live under the gaze of the most intrusive security and surveillance apparatus in human history. Half the country now lives in poverty. Many of the rest of us, if the corporate state is not overthrown, will join them. These truths are no longer hidden. The loss of credibility is the reason the establishment, and especially the Democratic Party, is seeking to shut down voices and sites that respond to its mendacity and its bankruptcy. No longer able to compete in the world of ideas, all they have left is the blunt instrument of censorship. Thank you for watching. You can find us on rt.com/oncontact. See you next week.
New reports out about carbon dioxide and unfortunately methane as well, and none of them are good. And this infects all of us and affects the whole health of the planet. So let me start with the bad news. We'll go to The Guardian here. The concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere increased at record speed last year to hit a level not seen for more than 3 million years, the United Nations warned. Globally, average concentrations of carbon dioxide reached 403.3 parts per million in 2016, up from 400 parts per million in 2015 because of a combination of human activities and a strong El Nino event. So it's not just climate change, but El Nino. But now the El Nino affects us more because of climate change. We have created, unfortunately, a vicious circle. And they explain, as the planet warms, El Ninos are expected to become more frequent. So it's a devastating 1-2 punch. Let's talk more about the details and how devastating this is. The increase of 3.3 parts per million is considerably higher than both the 2.3 parts per million rise of the previous 12 months and the average annual increase over the past decade of 2.08 ppm. It also is well above the previous big El Nino year of 1998 when the rise was 2.7 parts per million. So everything is getting worse. Even when huge El Nino events are taken into account, it's still worse. And when you combine the El Nino and climate change, carbon dioxide is at astronomical levels. The study, which uses monitoring of ships, aircraft, and stations on the land to track emissions trends since 1750, said carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is now increasing 100 times faster than at the end of the last ice age due to population growth, intensive agriculture, deforestation, and industrialization. So there are more bogeys out there. It's not just climate change. It's also the fact that we're doing things like deforestation. So then there are less plants, less trees to help us with the process, which they normally would. But now that's not working anymore and there's less trees. So it's a triple punch, a quadruple punch. That is why it is literally record shattering. They explain that the last time Earth experienced similar carbon dioxide concentration rates was during the Pliocene era, 3 to 5 million years ago, when the sea level was up to 20 meters higher than now. That is approximately 20 yards higher than it is today. So almost all of our coastal cities would be gone. Now, it doesn't happen overnight, but as we've seen this year, and in that legendary Mark Twain quote, change happens really gradually, and then all of a sudden. So this year we began to see all of a sudden as we got hit by hurricane after hurricane, drought after drought, fire after fire. And now carbon levels higher than they have been in 3 million years, which led to gigantic water levels earlier. And it is now increasing, as they explained, 100 times faster than it was at the end of the last ice age because it is not natural. It is man-made and we are intensifying all the problems. Just when you thought that was bad enough, then I got a report about methane, separate report. The WMO's report also points to a mysterious rise in the level of methane in the atmosphere, which were also higher than the 10-year average. So let's pause here. This is from Engadget. The earlier story was from The Guardian. So we know that methane is going to get released when the ice sheets melt because there's a lot of methane trapped there. And methane is actually worse than carbon. So
for greenhouse purposes. So once the methane gets released, there's no way of bringing it back into the ice. But things are worse than the scientists imagined. And I've told you this so many times. Scientists are by their nature conservative, not politically conservative, but scientifically conservative. They don't want to make wild assumptions. They tell you only what they know, and their estimates are on the conservative side, the cautious side. So we are going above their estimates, as you would normally predict if you were looking at cautious scientific estimates. And now the methane, they're not even sure where that's coming from. It isn't necessarily even from the ice sheet. So they say, here's one of the scientists saying, we do not understand. It's a professor that's an expert on this issue. We do not understand why methane is rising. It is very worrying. And then another expert says, future generations will inherit a much more inhospitable planet. And that is the WMO Secretary General. So with a combination of carbon levels like we've never seen before and a mysterious methane increase, let alone the methane increase that is unfortunately headed in our direction with more global warming, that is a certainty. We are literally in a world of trouble. We have to turn around, and we have to turn around right away. So the greed of today with the fossil fuel industry that controls American politicians and commands them to keep destroying the planet for their short-term profits is literally a disaster in the making. It's happening right in front of us. We're in the middle of a disaster movie, and unfortunately, politicians in America can't see it or don't want to see it, or more accurately, are paid not to see it. We got to get them out, and we got to fix this immediately. Once the methane is released from the ice, I don't know that we can turn this clock back. It's the whole planet. If you're sensing a sense of urgency from me, you are right. This is the thing you should be worried about, not powerless immigrants crossing the border with no money and no power and almost no threat to you. This is the threat. We all have to act together, and we have to do it immediately. If not, I'd say God help us all, but I don't really know who's going to help us. We don't help ourselves and fix this. This does not end well.